evening, everybody. My name is Mark Houston. I'm an alcoholic. And because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the big book, a set of precise, specific, clear-cut instructions that allow a guy like me to come to know God and the power of God in my life. Great sponsorship. Lots of meetings trying to help others. I haven't found it necessary to take a drink of alcohol since October the 19th of 1982. I want to thank the committee for asking me to come up and spend a little time with you all. I don't do a lot of speaking anymore. I only six times a year. Ego is a very interesting thing. I took a three-year sabbatical from speaking and just shut up, and it was a wonderful thing. You get asked to speak quite a bit. There's no process of rotation, which, in this is my opinion, I think is real dangerous. And if I had my way when they do conventions, we'd all show up, and there'd just be names in the hat, and they'd pull them, and then you would hear the speaker. But I'm just another member sitting in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, so but it's really good to be up here. Last time I was here, outside of geographics, going back and forth, passing through Amarillo, the last time I was here is 1995. You all have a great roundup, I think, in September, so I got a chance to come up and talk a little bit about sitting in the rooms, almost dying of untreated alcoholism. By the way, this, of course, is the Al-Anon room, right? So for all you Al-Anon members, I just want to tell you the energy in this room is so much nicer than where the drunks meet. Whatever that's worth. You know, it's got a bright, airy, you know, it's not signs. It really looks like somebody looked, spent some time on them, and then, you know, then there's the drunk side. You know? Although there's one obsessive compulsive in the group, because every the frames, they're perfect, they're... I don't know who that would be, but you all obviously do, right? When Dow was doing his MC, and he's doing a great, I wrote a definition in my big book, which I like to refer to. It says, characteristic of the so-called typical alcoholic is a narcissistic, egocentric core dominated by feelings of omnipotence, intent on maintaining at all costs its inner integrity. And you Al-Anons are attracted to us. I really like what you had to say, Marcia. There's nothing worse than being an alcoholic when you also have some Al-Anon tendencies. So I got a starter wife and a few others behind it as well. I was thinking of something when Marcia was talking. My dad died of alcoholism. That is what his death certificate says, but he did. His aorta burst when he was 62. He was an alkie. And my mother died of what I call untreated Al-Anonism 10 or 15 years ahead of time. So I've watched people die who hang around us without recovery, without a solution, and have my own experience with that along the way. So it was really good to hear you. Hear what you have to say about that. I'm going to spend a little bit of time on my story, you know, what it was like, what happened, what is it like now. The great news for me is I now have more time sober than I do drinking, so that's probably how my talk will go. When I was doing in the rooms, I loved the speakers that spent all their time with the drunk law because that's all my experience was. And now that's different. I want to talk with you mostly about why I love being sober, why I love the big book, why I work and rework the steps, why I work the disciplines of the 10th and 11th step, why I self-sponsor a whole bunch of men, why I do prayer and meditation 365 days a year, why I just completed reading my inventory three times. By the way, I want to take a minute to do that. For me, something that's very, very important as I continue to stay sober one day at a time and I'm asked to share is to share with you my current experience. I almost died in these rooms trying to live off the food I ate last year, let alone 2 weeks ago. And what I did and what I learned from that thing is I better stay current with my alcoholism with my recovery and what's going on. So I resubmit to the first 9 steps on a yearly basis so I can really go back and touch that first step again. Am I a real alcoholic? Go back and you remember all that. And I find some 1 or 2 guys and we go back and we rework doctor's opinion to page 23, look at the body and is that me, and the obsession of the mind, pages 23 to 43, and we look at what I call untreated alcoholism, the spiritual malady, page 52. What's my current unmanageability? What am I up against? See, if I pick up a drink of alcohol, the book says it's because I'm not in fit spiritual condition. I doubt that has anything to do with something that happened to me 20 years ago. Probably has a lot to do with my current experience. Doesn't matter what it is. Could be physical health, you know. One of the things I have to laugh about, I don't know how the rest of you experience getting older, but on any given day, I just never emotionally got much past 15, so I don't relate to getting older chronologically. But, you know, I talk to pals of mine, it's like the second they get out of their mouth, they start telling me about their physical problems. Or you're reading a newspaper, and you know, you're glad some obituaries, you know, because I'll be, in October, I'll be 62, I guess, and you're going, dead, you know, that kind of a thing. But I like to look at my current unmanageability. What am I up against? What's rubbing up against Mark today? What has Mark in fear? What's the stuff that might take Mark back to a drink today? Because it's different. It's different than what it was last year. Why? Because my life's different. The content of my life is different. And so I go back and I look at that every area of my life. How is it with work? How is it with money? How is it with my health? How is it with my pals? How is it in my home group? How is it with the IRS? How is it when I walk into a room full of people and I virtually know nobody? Can I be at peace? Or am I separate? Is there distance? How is it when I go into Starbucks and get coffee? I look people in the eye? Am I at peace with myself? How is it? You know? My current unmanageability, my current agnosticism. Oh, heaven forbid you be sober a long time and someone say you have agnosticism, right? If you want to know where your current agnosticism is, make a list of the stuff you've been afraid of this week. Right? Current agnosticism, areas I don't have God. Because over the years, I have areas I don't have God. You know how I know that? Because I get afraid. And when I get afraid and don't have God, I go into self-reliance. Now we got Mark's plan. That works so well. Between my 9th and 10th year, I wound up in a nut house in Houston, Texas. I haven't gotten out of Texas since. So I'll talk a little bit about how I got there, for those of you who want to consider that path. But, well, you never know, you know. Marcia touched on it, you know.
Yeah.
Meeting makers make it. I'll tell you where this guy made it, right to a nut house. So, but I'll talk about that. Might save some of you a trip. you know, and so I look at all that, and I go back and look at the second step. This concept of God, this experience I've had with God, is there more? Is there more past here? This block of knowledge and wisdom and experience. See, if all I have when I come to the steps or I come to this morning is my current memories and experiences of God, then God is limited and not infinite. And I'm limiting God and the experiences I can have with this power behind the name of God. So I come to the second step wide open with all this current unmanageability. Can God do something about it? How am I going to do this without God? Can God take me past here? Because everything I think I know about God has me here, and I need to get past it. These fears, this, whatever. Can I do that? See? Walk up to the third step. You know, 25 plus years sober. Taking a look at that, am I convinced my life drunk or sober running my will cannot and will not work? Make a list of areas in which I'm still trying to run my life on self-will. There's an easy way to figure out what that is. Go to 5 or 6 people know you and ask them for feedback. They'll give it to you. Then our books have beautifully described what it looks like when I live trying to live life on self-will, you know, where I'm making arrangements. My arrangements would only stay put if the Clean Air Group and all of its members only do as I wished. If they, yada, yada, yada. We all got our own, right? from the time we get up till the time we go to bed, our arrangements would only stay put, you know, all that kind of stuff. And you take a look at that, you say that incredible prayer. I offer myself to thee, build with me and do with me as thou wilt. I'm going to tell you, when I wound up in Houston, Texas, in that psychiatric hospital, my self-will had created the perfect storm. And the perfect storm consisted of a career ended, a divorce, lost a home, no money, physical health problems, severe untreated alcoholism, post-traumatic stress disorder. And then I'm looking at this sentence behind this perfect storm. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and you do with me as you want. How do those two fit in the same box? Right? Well, out of great suffering comes great joy. That's how they fit in the same box. But it's really easy when the content of your life is going great to talk about the third step. How about when the perfect storm comes along? Right? How is it then? Your heart's going to break. Right? Just going to break. How is it then when you do that third step? Right? And you sit and you look at that again. See, I have done enough work with the steps to know it's a set of spiritual exercises that far transcends anything I think is going to happen. When I do that third step and say that again, truth is I'm stepping off to an abyss and I'm not quite sure I want to go there because I know where it's taken me before. I don't know about the rest of you, but I have this idea sober sometimes that I'm going to decide where I live and what I do and who's in my life. You stay sober long enough, you'll look back, you'll get past that one. I was telling Pal the other day, I got real clear somewhere around my 10th, 11th year of sobriety, I needed to be traveling light for quite some time because I was going to get moved, and I did. I got moved. Matter of fact, I got moved back down to Austin about 2 years ago, and I, for the first time since I've been sober, know in the depth of my heart that I can sink roots there. But I get moved places, you know, and so do I want to do this again? You know, my life, the content of my life and my inner life, the one that really counts, is wonderful. I got a cat named Hobo, you know, those cats, and they get to purr. See, that's that peace that passes all understanding. I know what that purring feels like. I do that most of the time. I like it. Am I going to jump off this abyss again? No, I don't know. But I did. Wrote some inventory. Not a lot of inventory because I work with 10th and 11th step. And I like to do multiple fifth steps. I take a body of work, resentment inventory, fear inventory, and sex inventory, and I read it to three different people. Get three different perspectives. Fabulous experience. Sat down with the sixth step, made a list of my defects. Sober this long, I want to go to God in white robes, and instead I got egg in my face. And it isn't so pretty. See, that brings me down here, ego deflation, which I need. But I can't do on my own power, and I can't wish it. So I have a process that takes me to this place. Because I don't ever want to drink alcohol again. To do what I do when I drink. Because I'm like the tornado. Not a little whirling dervish. Like a tornado. And don't ever want to go to that place again. And then last week, me and a bunch of guys I'm doing some work with, we meet every Thursday night for an hour and a half. And we brought to that our list of amends. I got six amends. I got four of them that are questionable, so I got to meet with two people and find out whether or not I have to make amends. Current stuff. I stay current with my life. Nothing behind me. No wreckage back there. Nothing to clean up. No old stories to tell. See, it's a wonderful thing. And then I keep working with those disciplines of 10 and 11. So that's my home groups that carry this message group down in Austin, Texas. Me and a bunch of pals of mine took our judgments and formed our own meeting. You know how we do that, right? I heard it described here. Thank God for it. You know? Wayne and Susan and I were talking, and I think you go through this if you stay sober long enough and you continue to attempt to improve conscious contact. I think you get this idea there's some arrival place. I did. Well, the defects are finally all going to be gone. That's not my experience. But you see, my defects turned me to God. They turned me to my sponsor. They turned me to the steps. Right? Sometimes your self will run riot as God's will for me. So quit worrying about that. Say the seven steps, take all of me good and bad, and I just rock and roll and move on from that place. See, I have a strong suspicion that which created me is the only one that can change those elements, so I don't play around with that very much. It hasn't always been this way. Born and raised in the state of Iowa, second oldest of four boys. Dad died of alcoholism. Actually, right now I have two brothers that are drinking. One of them thanks to the criminal justice system, and the other one thanks to a stroke. But quite frankly, in hindsight, I think they're hard drinkers. But they sure looked like me. But then I got another brother. He turned 60 May 26th. And boy, he drinks like I drink. And as I said, my dad died of alcoholism. You know, I've often reflected back, because over the years I've really worked with a lot of men. I've met men that came from wonderful, wonderful families. I've met the families. And I've met men that came from families that were a little less than normal, whatever that looks like. And you know what? I think Joseph and Mary, I could have been born to them, and I would have had trouble with whiskey. I really do. I'm not quite sure how all that works, but most of the alkies I know, I don't think good parenting or bad parenting have much to do with it. I really don't. My dad, I tell you the truth, I'm really not sure what his nationality is. It's a weird thing in my family. My grandfather was adopted, and I found out when I was 5 or 6 years sober, my last name spelled like the city, but that's only because I found some paperwork, and my grandfather, who was adopted, got so mad at the people who adopted him. It used to be spelled H-U, and he changes to H-O, so I don't have a clue about that side of the family. Not quite sure, but boy, they sure like to drink. My mother was a historic Norwegian woman, and you can talk about weather, sports, and news, but don't even begin to remotely come up with a feeling. I don't know if any of you know any Norwegians, but weather, sports, and news, just about the extent of anything else, they're going to excuse themselves. So my dad's a drunk, and that's the way that one was. I tell people it felt like I raised myself, but I'm an alky, so I think I kind of like it. You know, when I look back, my dad's alcoholism was not pretty to watch at times, and so I made some decisions about I wasn't going to go down that path. But the problem was there was this thing inside me that kept this internal condition. I think the big book uses words which describe it. Some people talk about a hole in the gut, and they talk about other things, but, you know, Doc's opinion, he uses three words: restless, irritable, discontent. And that was me from Jump Street. I mean, a longtime pal of me just said to me the other day, he said, "I think you must have been a freaky kid." But restless, irritable, discontent described me. Some of the stuff on 52, the bedevilments, really described me. Trouble in personal relationships, the one with myself. The one with myself. Right? If you said to me what I said to me, I'd have to kill you. That voice. That started real early, right? You're too short, you're this, you're that, you're a huge, blah, blah, blah. It wouldn't stop. Just wouldn't stop. You'll never amount to anything, you're dumb, on and on and on. Can't control your emotional nature. I love this. The Al-Anons have a respond. And, you know, my whole deal for a lot of years was react. The word response was not in there. Can't control my emotional nature, prey to misery and depression, full of fear, unhappy. That described me. When I took a drink of alcohol for the very first time, it treated that condition. Alcohol treats alcoholism. And it caused an instantaneous flooding throughout my entire body. I had an epiphany. I really did. And it wasn't Al-Anon in the world going to get between me and that experience. Because four of them tried. But seriously, that I have to stay clear on something, ladies and gentlemen. What I have to stay clear on is the effect produced by alcohol. And the reason I have to stay clear on it is this. It's always there. It's out there. It always will be out there. And it does something for me that only God does. God or alcohol. Seems to me, based on my experience, those are the only two masters I've ever served. And if I'm not moving toward one, I'm moving toward the other. But that's what alcohol did. And I could go on. But when you take something inside you that does that, see, I remember saying to my mother one time when I'd gone through and I was really looking at my first step, and you can take the doctor's opinion, turn statements into questions. And there's a bunch of questions in there. And I would ask, you know, my mother said, well, do you like the effect produced by alcohol? And you could always tell when they're non-alky because their eyes immediately start to get big. Like, why are you asking me this dumb question? Or I'd say to her, well, do you ever lose control? And she goes, why would I do that? Why would I do that? You know. But see, it was different. It was different with me. That part that says stop, mine just said go. I should have knew I was in trouble because I'm 16, only the third time drinking. I'm driving the car. I would buy a case of Pabst Blue Ribbon. I got three pals with me. Two of them only drink three or four cans, and they're puking. And me and the rest of the guy drink it all, and we want more. And I'm driving. Now, I think that's because I'm a big drinker. No, I was an alcoholic, and my body acts different. But, I went on. I was very small in high school. Went into speech, drama, all those things. You could never get a beat on me, because I couldn't get a beat on me. This internal condition I had. Early on, this voice that said, they're going to find out who you really are. And they won't want anything to do with you. And Wayne and I were talking about that. You know, when I sobered up, I used to get resentful at the early members of AA. You may not have noticed this, but they made all their amends in a week. That's because they lived in the same town their whole life. Behind this thing that you're going to find out, I lived in seven states. So I had to go make amends in Iowa, South Dakota, Colorado, California, Oregon, Washington, Alaska, and that wasn't cheap. Because I got this thing in me that says, you're going to find out. And by the way, I'm going to talk a little bit about that. I did that sober. Build up, success, sobriety. That voice, they're going to find out. Quit, tear it all down. Build up, tear down. Build up, tear down. Thank God I didn't drink. But finished high school, went on to college. Three different universities, as Bill's story says, drinking began to take on more importance in my life. Finally, wound up at the University of South Dakota, and then there was this little thing going on called the Vietnam War. And I got out of high school in 1964, and I thought it would pass. It didn't. And 6 years into not having my degree, I had this little small county I lived in drafted me. So, They sent me over to Vietnam. I went AWOL 44 days. I'd gone to basic training, AIT, and then I came back from there and I picked up a drink, and the drink took me. See, I didn't understand that for years and years and years, that when I take a drink, it takes me. I love it when I hear some alcoholic, they almost talk as if they had a relapse, like they know when they'd come back again. I mean, my last drink lasted a year and a half. You know? But I had a 2 week pass before I was to report for Vietnam. I took a drink, 44 days later I showed up. And I had nothing to do with that. I didn't know that at the time. But so 13 and a half months over there, and then I came back, finished up college, and married my starter wife. $150 in a Volkswagen, roared up San Francisco. Fancied myself a leader. Went to work for a major insurance company that gave me a big Bonneville as a claims adjuster in San Francisco, and doing a lot of drinking and other outside issue stuff, and just ripping, roaring up down the streets of San Francisco, and going up to Napa Valley once a month, learning about wines. And, you know, you go from, over time, my drinking took me from Cabernet to Boone's Farm, but And you know, this thing I told you that I have inside, that alcohol treats, the more successful I got, the more it began to show up, that you're going to find out that I don't deserve and I shouldn't be here and I shouldn't do this. And unbeknownst to me, what I do then is I continue to drink to treat that condition, and I got to move. I came to AA as Sprinter. I tell the men I work with, if you want to stay sober, you better get used to marathon running. Because these rooms is not for sprinters. Alkies are sprinters, man. 100-yard dash, I'll give you my best shot for 10 yards. I mean, I'll buy the equipment. I mean, I'll be looking great. Hire a coach, do some training. You know, I'm serious. Good. If I hit the 10-yard mark, anybody's ahead of me, I'm done. But I won't give the equipment away. It'll just build up my garage along with all the other projects I started. So I kept thinking I'd make career changes. I didn't. That voice, you know, they're going to find out. You know, so I moved from San Francisco up to Eugene, Oregon, 6 months there, and then up to Portland, Oregon. I'm still being successful in the business world. And then when I look back, for me, there was alcoholism and the changes that began to bring about me in terms of just my sense of morals and values. I've known the difference. Right, wrong, we all do. That's God consciousness, right? All of us today, you can always tell if you're out of sync. Why? Because that still small voice says, you just told a lie, it goes like that, you know, right? We all know that, right? And I begin to compromise that and, you know, go on road trips and doing outside sales and cheating on my wife and then drinking to cover that up and, you know, that thing just on and on and on. And then 75, getting divorced, then going up to the state of Washington, up to Seattle, from Seattle up to Alaska. Doing a whole bunch of outside issues along with the drinking. Alcohol was my deal. It's always been my deal. I was telling a guy the other day, I think I love alcohol more than most people drinking it today. And that's the truth. Because of the effect it had on me. Thank God for alcohol. But I'll tell you that some of you can probably relate to this. I just probably talk about it more openly than others. You know that in all the years that I drank, never once did I think of committing suicide. That is not true in sobriety. Because alcohol really treats something in me. Really treats something. See? That's why for me, I really wish I could just go to a few meetings, dabble a little bit with the steps, sponsor a couple of guys, and have a great life. That is not the way it is. My experience is what alcohol did, and the passion I saw in alcohol is the same passion I had to bring to the program, recovery, the steps, the disciplines of 10 and 11. You know, I'm not going to sit here and tell you I love reworking 1 through 9 every year. Why do I do it? Because I like the effect produced. That's why. There's no other reason. I don't do it to be a neat guy, to be liked. I do it for self-preservation, ladies and gentlemen. I know what conscious contact is like. Unblocked. I know what that's like. I love how that feels. So, that all came crashing down to an end here in Alaska, and then I wind up in Colorado. I was unemployed for probably 2 years. Along the way, marriages, divorces, careers ended. And the drinking. I still remember when I would, probably the last 2-3 years, I would drink. Where you would drink, but you couldn't get high. It's horrible. Now your body, your physical body, of course, demonstrated certain properties. I don't know if this happened to you in the latter years of my drinking. My body just did things of its own accord without asking me. One time I had I was with one of my wives in a evangelical Christian 12-step, me and her. And I know that because I stole his Bible. And he convinced her to take me to a big revival meeting. This was, I still remember this, September 28th of 1982. So I go to this big revival meeting at the Church of the Nazarene in Denver, Colorado. Huge. Holds like 2,000 people. So they had 6, 8, 10, they're doing the music and doing all the stuff, and much like Bill Wilson, I thought that my drinking could outlast their rambling, you know, sipping a little. And then you get all these voices, it's like out of a Cheech and Chong movie, the voices going, I hope nobody sees me. I don't know anybody there, right? It's not a place I've ever been to before. But the voice, you know, I hope nobody sees me, right? And then they're bouncing up and down a lot, and that was kind of disconcerting to me, and they're going on and on, and my current wife at that time, because I needed a place to live, she's getting all excited, and then it calms down a little, and they do preaching, do whatever, and then it all starts to build, and then they do the altar call, and I'm just sitting there, you know, a little sip every now and then, kind of taking it all in, and they do the altar call, and my body gets up and starts walking out. And I'm screaming inside, what are you doing? Down the aisle, there's 8 or 9 of them there, and they're slapping hands and doing that. And I said, oh, I got one. And I just lunged, you know. I remember they give me down that little white Bible to make me sign, make me turn my life and well over the care of God and Jesus. Sign it and date it. You know, I was waiting for him. Give me the blood, you know. They didn't. Just drunk in Cooter's Barn. But I got to tell you something. That experience taught me about the third step when you say something, because that was September 28th of 1982. And God separated me from alcohol on October 19th, 1982. And I don't believe in coincidence. I think, in a drunken stupor, in a year and a half drunk, I think I told God something that day that he took for granted. Which was, you told me you wanted my help. I'm here. Yeah, but you went just a little rat on me there, big guy. Taking away alcohol wasn't necessarily part of that equation. Could have been a few other things, you know, could have given me that. But that's kind of how that one rolled. Ooh. My first couple of years sobering up, boy, I tell you, I was damaged. When I went to a detox and rehab, they said, you got some liver damage, you got kidney damage, I weighed about 250, everything I owned you fit in a duffel bag. And they said, you've also got a little brain damage from those outside issues things you've been doing. But other than that, I think you got a good chance, you know. So, really. I don't know how I use the term, it's like Cheech and Chong movie or Stranger in a Strange Land, because when I first got sober, this is what alcohol robbed me of. First, I hadn't been to a theater in like 10 years. Grocery shopping. I'd be going with, because I went to work at a camera video store in Colorado, and so occasionally, you know, guy'd go shopping, we'd be lunchtime, we'd go pick something up, and I'd be going down, pushing my cart, and I'd be going, wow, look at that. And he'd go, Mark's been in the store for 10 years. You know, it's like, or I didn't have a car for 2 years, so I'd ride a bus. Now you're a bird. I'd go, whoa. I know they thought I was smoking reefer. I wasn't. Alcohol really, really robbed me of a lot of stuff. You know, remember the first time I saw the color green, it was like, whoa. It was just coming at me, you know, and you go in to open the bank account, and the bank says, you always know there's trouble. I had no idea I had any prior problems with banks until I went in and opened the account. Can we talk to you about your... Okay. Well, okay, I opened the account. You have this little issue of 9 checks to another bank. No recall. Don't even remember opening the account there. So it was... first couple of years were tough. Lots of meetings. And some of you know Don Pritz. Don was the man who really had a tremendous impact on me. He came into my life when I was about 3 years sober, because I really had done little or nothing at all in the way of the steps or any of the work, because I couldn't, quite frankly. I'd go to work, come home, fight with my wife, go to a meeting. That's what I did. I don't know if any of you have ever got married drunk, but... I did, and you know, you sober up, and I mean, I just didn't even like that woman. Not her fault. I just, you know, alcohol does what it does, and so that went on for about two and a half years, and finally got a car. I mean, to this day, when I get in my car, I go, Thank you, God. Thank you, God. You know, 2 years riding a bus and, you know, hooking rides. And, you know, someone said to me, what do you like about sobriety? And I said, well, simple things. He said, like what? And I said, well, I'll give you an example. I actually go into my closet and I have a hard time deciding which one of the 15 pairs of shoes I want to wear. I said, I love that because when I came into AA, I had one old pair of sneakers. Now, I may seem like a little thing, but gosh, I like being sober. Or if I'm going to go on a trip, which bank account do I want to take some money out of, right? Wasn't no bank account when I came in these rooms. You know, which car do I want to drive to the airport instead of which tennis shoe am I going to put on to walk there, right? People say, why do you still go to AA? Yeah, I still go to AA. Why? Because I like wearing shoes. There's a lot of reasons I still go to AA, work the steps. You know, I have a sponsor. Just simple stuff. Other people, you know, like the electrical company, they float me electricity for 30 days. Isn't that amazing? Little stuff other people take for granted. I get this thing called a driver's license, right? They renew it, you know. Just it's stuff I don't take for granted because when I came in, I just didn't have any of that. And I didn't know if it would come back, but it did. Then I hooked up with Don. He made it fairly clear as far as he could tell in observing me that I was in one-third of a three-part program and expecting the results of all three. And he said, as far as I can tell, you're only in the fellowship. You're only going to meetings. I've been listening to you. I've been watching you. And I'm willing to help you. It's very apparent to me that the mind you brought in here is pretty much still present. That's not a good thing. So I said, okay. And he and I sat down and went from the title page of the big book to page 164. I'll give you an example. The first inventory I wrote, I think I might have had 12, 13 resentments and a few fears. And when I came out of the body of work with Donna, I had 127 amends alone. That ought to tell you something. Needless to say, it was very thorough. And then that particular group of people, the lineage, because we all have lineages, right? If you trace whoever your sponsor is, and they were real big in the eighth step in the word all. You know, all, make all this of all the persons who harmed. All the money paid back. You didn't really mean all. All the way back to grade school, stealing from the grocery. Ooh. Okay. So took me 17 years, but every single amend on that first body of work I made. 14 years to pay back the IRS, traveling to all those states. How free do you want to be? I didn't want anything behind me. See, I believed the book. Willing to go to any lengths. Yeah. See, I stole from those people. I don't mean money. I don't know what you all's experience with amends are. My amends showed me what I really stole from humans was emotional security. And there's nothing okay with that. See? I didn't make amends to a mother that for 14, 15 years... she didn't know if she was going to get a call night after night telling her son's going to be scraped up off the concrete somewhere. Right? Oh, well, I'm just going to drink and go into meetings. Oh, whoopee. Right? How do you make that right? Well, you stay sober, for one. That's what I did. Every time I told her I was going to do something, I did it. Paid her back a bunch of money. Surprised him with things. Went up one day, television set's getting old, I showed up with noon. Right at the day they died. That's how you give that back. That's how you repair that stuff. Right? That's what that was about. I was several years sober before I really got the line in the big book that Mark was a tornado, what I did to people. Right? And the good news was I reached a place where none of that was okay anymore. So I was able to clean that up. So I'm glad they pushed me on making all of the amends. The truth is, though, between about my third or fourth year and between my ninth and tenth year, I did virtually nothing with meditation. I did very little with 10 and 11. I did some stuff in the morning. I sponsored a few guys. Got trapped in the material world, working a lot of hours. Got divorced in there, chasing skirt. you know, really important stuff, right? And what happened to me is I told you that perfect storm came along. And I just about, the ultimate act of God, as far as I can tell, is me ending my life. And I just about did that. I came within 24 hours of doing that with a plan. When you've been through what I've been through, death is no scary deal, ladies and gentlemen. Life has been Mark's problem. Death, violence, life. Life. How's the guy live across the street, have the same mailing address, stay married to the same woman, do the same job, pay his... How do you do that? How does he show up day after day, week after week, month after month? How does he do that? See, that's what I couldn't do, right? Series of events, and wind up down in that hospital in Houston, Texas. And about 2 weeks into that hospital, I was in horrible shape from the inside out at a cellular level. Pain beyond anything I could comprehend. One of my spiritual teachers calls it my desert experience. He said later it was a great thing. I said, yeah, easy for you to say. But about the second week there, I think, I just could not take it anymore. And I remember getting down on my knees, and quite frankly, that's when I had a burning bush, third step experience. And I read that prayer, and I said that prayer, and I paraphrased it, but here's what it sounded like. God, drunk or sober, I have given this my best shot. I quit. From this day on, I'm going to do what this big book asked me to do, and you are responsible for everything else in my life. Where I live and where I work and who's in my life and who's not in my life, you, that's in your hands. This is in my hands. Improving conscious contact with you through this being. And from that day to this, that's what I've done. And my course, my guess, what happened? My life took off like a rocket. Finally let me out of the nut house, then they hired me. True story. Now, I'm a big book thumper, right? And I had a lot of opinions and judgments about treatment, rehab, and all that stuff. So here I am working in that field, right? Took me several years to figure that out. Can you think of anybody better to work in that business than a big book thumper? I can't. Right? Where you're carrying some real power there. Moved to Kerrville, Texas. Married my fourth wife, now that I think about it, before I made that move. By the way, just so you know, I'm very clear when the big book talks about driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. No sane man would choose to get married four times. I was just being driven, ladies and gentlemen. I reworked 1 through 9 for 2 solid years, a lot of work. And then I began to work with the disciplines of 10 and 11. I mean, really work with them. I really went in the book and I really looked at what the book was asking Mark, the alcoholic, to do on a daily basis to stay in fit spiritual condition. And I made a decision that I was going to do it. No excuses, no nothing. Not too busy, nothing. So I begin with meditation every day, big book, upon awakening. There's a whole bunch of prayers. Mark considers his plans for the day before he begins, and I say all the prayers. And then I go through and I set my timer, and I start to read books on meditation. I begin to meditate, started with 7 minutes twice a day, then ultimately 20 minutes, and then ultimately on the weekend sometimes for an hour. And I begin to go to monasteries, and I begin to do spiritual retreats, and I begin to sit in the silence. And I begin to be driven, just like the big book says, be quick to see where religious people are right. 2 years studying with a Native medicine man, Order of Saint Benedict, meditation teachers, seeking hundreds and hundreds of books, wanting to improve conscious contact. One of the things I was telling some folks was, I do a lot of stuff along with, never instead of. I came to know God and the power behind that name through the 12 steps in the big book in this fellowship, and I will be grounded there till the day that I die. But I do follow the instructions of the book, and I've done all kinds of other, what I call 11-step work. And I'm so grateful I did all of it. powerful, powerful experiences happen. You want to learn about meditation? Go talk to a monk who's been meditating 30 years. Want to learn about silence? Go on a 5-day silent retreat. You know, a spiritual life's not a theory. I have to live it. Got open-minded. Incredible experiences begin to happen. Starting to sponsor a lot of men. Starting to do some workshops. Talking about the precise, specific, clear-cut instructions. Going back to that basic promise I made to God in that nut house. You take care of everything else. You take care of everything else. Where I work, where I live, who's in my life, who's not in my life. You take care of it all. Had some other periods of time there. Intense suffering. Intense suffering. You know, Alki's... I don't know how we got this way either, but I'm going to help some of you alcoholics. We live in the world of relativity. Okay? Now, what that means is we're born, we're going to die. And you know, like the book says, happy, joyous, and free? Well, in order to experience happy, you got to know what pain and sadness is. I'm sorry, you just do. Otherwise, there's no... But Alkies, we love to camp in this thing of, we're obsessed with feeling good. Feeling good. Happy, joyous, and free all the time. Well, excuse me a minute. You know, that's not how it works, right? You can have as profound an experience in the middle of deep, deep suffering than you ever can in the middle of deep joy. I welcome all of it. Bring God right in the middle of all of it. Resist nothing. You know, what are some of the things that has happened as a result of this? Number one is I got thrust into now beyond anything I could have ever comprehended. Meditation did that for me. Here's what I mean when I say I'm thrust into now. I awakened, the big book says, in the 10th step, Mark's entered the world of the Spirit. These are the only words I know how to describe what happened to me. Is most of the time I stay grounded in my awakened spirit and I take that in this and experience whatever content unfolds. My whole life used to be about content. What I owe Monday through Friday, I got to go to my job. You see, that's all about content, isn't it? Oh, I'm so excited. Why? The weekend's coming. Well, was there something wrong with Wednesday? You see, ladies and gentlemen, I can't improve upon now. I can't. The content changes. I can't improve upon it. It is incredible. It is holy. It is sacred. It is here. It is now. You know, all of you, for example, you wake up tomorrow morning. If you're in a relationship, imagine if you woke up tomorrow morning and you really got, I mean really got, that the first time you looked at that person in your life, you've never been in that moment with them before. Do you think that would revolutionize your relationship? Because that's the truth if you're awake. See, most of my life I'm asleep, dreaming, I'm awake. The steps woke me up to what? To this. My God. Juicy, sweet, don't get no better. You know? It just doesn't get any better. No place to get anymore. Nothing to seek, just to be where? Here. See? Go find God. Well, I'm sorry to hear that. Where isn't God? You know, see, God's closer than breathing. All I did was woke up to that which I'm always present to. You know? I always think of myself when I first came into the rooms of AA, imagine that, for example, I'm a fish and I'm in the water, and the water's God. And I'm walking up to the elders saying, how do I find God? They said, breathe. I go, what do you mean? You see? It's like that kind of a thing. And all of it is incredible. The pain, the joy, the suffering, getting older. You know, the last 2-3 years, a lot of my mentors passed away. Don died. My good friend Joe Hawk died down in Brazil. He had a heart attack. Four real, real close people. And I was feeling what you feel when people close to you pass away. Those men had a huge impact on my life. They were mentors, they were teachers. And I remember one night I was in some pain, and I remember thinking to myself, saying to myself, you know, I wish Don was here. You hear that voice, I'm always here. And I realized, you know, he's in the fiber of my being, all the stuff that anyone who's had an impact in my life and recovery is right in here, see, always. And that's what I take out to be of service to what God and my fellow human beings. You know, I had to come into these rooms and work the steps and work with the big book to understand words that have been around forever, like, wear the world like a loose garment.
What does that mean?
It means wear the world like a loose garment. You and I live in a world of impermanence, wanting to hang on to permanence. Right? Everything's on loan. Everything is on loan. And I don't know for how long. And you know why? I'm glad I know that. Because I don't take anything for granted. I don't take a single pal. I don't take my lady friend, Marcia. I don't take my cat, Hobo. I don't take any of the plants I got in my house. I don't take any of my employees. I don't take this breath for granted. It's all on loan. So it has a sacredness to it. See? You touch that. Time with friends. All of it. A bite of food, a drink of water. It don't get no better than this. See? Oh, just because we can go to meetings. No, no, there's just a little bit more here, ladies and gentlemen. You know, the elders, there's a phrase some of you might be able to relate to. I call it a sleep dream and you're awake. See, I used to think because my eyes were open, I was awake. That's not true. People are born asleep, they grow up asleep, they marry asleep, they have children asleep, and die asleep. See? What is waking up? I think it happens in the pages of the Big Book. We talk about a revolutionary spiritual experience. An awakened spirit. Where you really get to make some choices. You really wake up to what is important. You know the dash? Go to any cemetery and you got the date they were born, the date they died, and the dash. Last 2 years I've been working with the question, what's your dash look like? What's your dash look like, Mark? What's important in your dash? Is it the people you've helped? Is it the kind words you spoke? What is it? Is it the money you made? No. It's all the things I learned in the Big Book in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's about love, getting out of myself, trying to help someone else, being of service. What's your dash look like, Mark? What a great question to sit with. Right? Come in these rooms, like I said, these elders, they say these phrases, right? Like, live and let live. Sounds trite when you're new. You stay sober long enough, you could write a 1,400-page book on what that means. You know? Oh, well, this too will pass. See, and, you know, now I've been sober for a while. Now I get it. You know, they didn't talk much. They don't say much. They'll keep coming back. You know, you ever get drunk, you don't dig a drink. It's like, that guy did need to sober up. He's not well, you know. It's just that, see, how do you talk to someone about what really, the juice, what really happens in these rooms, you know? The incredible things that can happen. God, such gifts. I've learned about being a man in this room, in these rooms. What is it like to be a man of integrity? Be responsible, to be accountable, you know? Served in a lot of different positions, GSR. Matter of fact, my home groups would wake me into that again. Haven't done that for a while. Treasurer, you know, I'm still surprised, although we're a smart AA group, we have two of us on the account. So, in strict accounting, and you don't get over the prudent reserve, and anyhow, it's a fabulous life, don't miss it. If you're new, or if you've been around for a while, and you're not feeling that joy, you're not excited about your life, consider reworking 1 through 9 again. Writing some new inventory. Reading to several different people. Get excited. Get excited about your life. You're fascinating. Get excited about God. The steps. Get excited about your dash. What it can do. What it can do for you. What it can do for others. You know, came to Texas in 1991, driving a 1978 Saab with $100 on my back. Crazy as a bedbug. Watching what God has done to me and through me. Met several of you. One man telling me a story, and he met me on a long car drive from Kansas to Amarillo. See, little dots, little connections all over. Number of people responsible for each and every one is being sober is amazing if we can wake up to that. Don't take your home group for granted. Don't take the, you know how our mind does in judgments, right? You come back to your home group. This group's been here for a while. It's a very mature group. And then you hear the voice, "Hell, I heard Bob every day. I've got to hear this again." Well, remind yourself, you've never been in that moment with him. Therefore, you've never heard him before. So, wake up to all that stuff. I have very much enjoyed spending some time with you all. And I thank you so much, and I am so grateful for conscious contact with God as I have experienced God, and I'm so grateful for the big book and rooms like this and the people like you. God bless you all. Love you.